Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, welcome to Brain Injury Radio Network. Tonight is our regular Wednesday installment of our program Recovery Now with your host, Kim Justice. If you'd like to know more about my story, you can find it at inaflash.org. I, too, am a fellow traumatic brain injury survivor. I appreciate you tuning in tonight, and as always, I look forward to your input. So now, we'll get on with the show.
Well, hello and happy hump night from somewhere in middle America. Glad you're all here tonight. Hope you've had a great summer because tomorrow is the first day of fall. Hard to believe. I don't know where summer went. In fact, I don't know where the last couple of years have gone. With COVID, of course, and I don't know, maybe just getting older time, but in any case, glad that you're all here tonight. Tonight, of course, I enjoy every show that I'm blessed to be able to do, and all of my guests, but it is Brain Aneurysm Awareness Month, and that's what brought me here. Vis-a-vis writing my book about my experience and Craig hearing that and inviting me to become a host. I think it's been about 12 and a half years ago. I had a ruptured brain aneurysm and I was 5 years old, perfectly healthy. I'm not going to go into my story, just a little basic. And then tonight we're going to have some guests talk about their brain aneurysms. I can fire statistics at you all day, like 1 in 50 people are walking around with an unruptured brain aneurysm. Every 18 seconds, one ruptures. I don't even have their screen in front of me. But 65% or so have ongoing residuals. And in any case, I was healthy at the peak of my career, physique, everything at 35 years old, and everything was going great. It was a usual day, January 9th of 1995, and I was fortunate because someone else was driving when I normally would have been, and I was struck. And I have a really hard time saying, with the worst headache I've ever had in my life, and no judgment to anyone else who says that, but I've had some really bad headaches and migraines, and this was not like any headache I've ever had. It was like an axe got buried in my head and didn't leave until I was in a coma and woke up having had a craniotomy, a coma and 11 days later. And it was a game changer. It was interesting, though, because back then, well, even now, I guess, the neurosurgeon's job is to do the surgery and hopefully to save your life. And that is considered a success to them. And it is. Certainly not minimizing that. However, no one mentioned the residuals that I would be carrying with me down the road all the way to now. And we'll talk a little bit about those things later. And as my guests talk tonight, they'll be telling a bit about their stories and any challenges that they still deal with. Or there are people who come out scot-free. I don't hear a lot of them. put it this way. I don't want to sound discouraging to anyone who's new to this venue of brain aneurysm, AVM, because it does become manageable, or we all wouldn't still be here. I wouldn't still be here since 1995 if it didn't become manageable. But it was a surprise to me because I was planning on just, you know, they did surgery. They told me it was a success, and I planned on everything going back to normal. As soon as that ugly zipper head healed up and my hair grew back, I thought my life would come back as I knew it. And it didn't. And that took some getting used to and some compensatory strategies, some willingness to let go of old ideas, and just to make some changes in my life. And I'm sure that's true of the others. So for those of you who are new around here, I almost forgot my show intro. Recovery Now is a gathering place for anyone seeking recovery from the challenges of life on life's terms. Guests share their experience, strength, and hope. We discuss useful tools that have helped us lighten the load of our journey through recovery. More will be revealed. This is a we recovery program because it is in the we that we find the new me. We focus on the four A's of recovery: awareness, acceptance, action, and adaptation. This is a place for survivors striving to become thrivers, and for that, warrior. And again, I'm going to bring on my first guest in 1 second. I just wanted to say, in regard to Brain Aneurysm Awareness Month, that with the kind of numbers, and one place you can look is BAFOUND.org. That stands for Brain Aneurysm Foundation.org. In short, BAFOUND.org. And that will give you a lot of information, a lot of statistics, a lot of things to look for. And I think I was telling John, who I'm getting ready to bring on in just a second, that it's interesting because when I started, 12 and a half years ago, a TBI was a TBI, an ABI, I didn't even know what that was until somebody called me that. I told John I've been called worse. What that stands for is an acquired brain injury. And when I had my aneurysm, I didn't know what that was. I had never heard of it before. Later, after being around here, I became acquainted with an AVM. But some things have really changed in decade. They had everything in separate compartments back then. And I noticed not too long ago that, at least on the brain injury sites, under TBI, ABI is a category. And just to brief the audience real quick, a TBI, or traumatic brain injury, is something that originates from the outside, like helmets banging together, a blow to the head, in a domestic abuse situation. Falling is the number one cause for TBIs. Anything that originates from the outside that bangs the head, or there doesn't even necessarily have to be direct contact. In the case of, say, one new thing is that they've categorized concussion as a TBI as well, and there is such a thing as a whiplash concussion, which I happened to suffer from a fall in 2005. And in that case, it's still a TBI, but there's not a direct hit, just like it implies. You've all heard of whiplash before. When your neck snaps really hard, your brain reverberates off the front and the back of your skull, which of course is a sharp, bony cage that your like jello brain is in. And so when you snap it real hard back and forth, and that could be someone grabbing the shirt in the case of football or some kind of an argument, or in the case of a fall like I had, that it just happened that way, or in a car accident, the one we've all heard of. You're not getting a direct hit, but you are. So that's a TBI, an acquired brain injury, which they've now put as a subcategory under the TBI, or another form of TBI, I should say, originates from the inside. And that's something like an aneurysm, an AVM, a brain tumor, a stroke, those types of things that come from the inside. So that gives you a little background between an ABI and a TBI. But also in this last decade, it seems that brain aneurysm has merged with AVM. It's because they're very similar in the way that they act. And so brain aneurysm and AVM have become somewhat interchangeable, or at least really close cousins. And that's different than when I started. It's different that ABI is an expression of a TBI now. So they're learning more all the time, I hope. In any case, some fun facts to know and tell on Brain Injury Awareness Night. And tonight, instead of just shooting more statistics at you, which you can check out yourself, again at bafound.org is one place. I have a couple of guests on tonight that are going to share their experience, strength, and hope, because they have different stories. And so I don't know if they knew, and maybe each can tell that when they come on, if they knew what a brain aneurysm or an AVM or a rupture was prior to them having their own. But it blows me away, because in the brain, and I don't have the stat for aneurysms, but for brain injuries, TBIs, there's 206 million a year. And it blows me away even still. Everyone knows what cancer, heart disease, diabetes is. And I think more people are knowing now what a brain injury is, what a traumatic brain injury is, because of football and because of our veterans. The last 20 years, the blast injury has been the hallmark of that injury, of that conflict, until we found out about the burning pits. But in any case, sadly, they had to be contributory, but I'm just surprised that more people don't know more about. In fact, I use the letters. I mentioned TBI the other day, and somebody said, "What's that?" And I said, "A TBI, because I take it for granted," and they asked me what that meant. And it does blow me away with as many as there are every year that, you know, I think we all know someone who's had cancer, heart disease, diabetes. I think we all probably know someone who's had some form of brain injury as well, maybe not an aneurysm or an AVM, but a brain injury. Funny thing about that is they don't always know they've had a brain injury. I was talking to a guy the other day who has been a boxer and then went into martial arts, kicking blows to the head. And he swears that he's never had a brain injury. The interesting thing about him is that I hear him talk a lot about having headaches. He repeats himself a lot, so I know his short-term memory is affected. And let's see. He doesn't have dizziness or balance issues. Yeah, a little aphasia, trouble, short-term memory loss, sometimes not finding the right word. So I've got a deal of 12 things here I'll read later at the end of the show that not buddy who's had our experience has all 12 of these, but all of us, those speaking tonight and those listening, have had some, a few of these 12 things as afterglow or afterburn from our aneurysms. And so with that, excuse me, choking to death. That means it's time for me to shut up, right? Oh, I guess I did put a couple statistics in the show. An estimated 6.5 million people in the United States have an unruptured brain aneurysm, or I guess, yeah, the 1 in 50. The annual rate of rupture is 8 to 10 per 100,000 people. About 30,000 people in the United States suffer brain aneurysm ruptures each year, and a brain aneurysm ruptures every 18 minutes. Yuck. I'm going to bring John on first tonight. I'll tell you just a tiny bit about him, and then I'll bring him on, and he's going to share his story with us. But I also want to say up front before she comes on, tonight is Megan, who's going to be speaking in a little bit, the anniversary of her 5th year out from her spontaneous subarachnoid hemorrhage in 2017 while she was bicycling home. So we thank God we're blessed to have her here with us tonight. And I don't know, do you say congratulations or, yeah, great. 5 years out is great. I found that for newcomers, the longer we've been around, the more encouraging it is for them, because we all suffer a lot of fear. And in my case, diagnosed with PTSD, not only from this experience, but this experience didn't help. It escalated the anxiety I had from something else before. So when something happens so drastic in your life that turns it upside down, anxiety or PTSD is often comes with. And so it's nice for people to hear of people who have a little time under their belt, particularly 5 years, however long my back to 1995 is. It's nice for newcomers to know that, as I said, we adapt to the changes in our life, and we're still here. That's the good news. So John Heilman is a nearly 20-year brain aneurysm survivor / AVM. He's never given up and will never let a brain injury limit his life. With that, excuse me, I want to bring on John, who is new to the show, so I'm really excited to have him on, and very happy that when asked, he was willing to come and talk to us on the show tonight, because his experience actually encompasses about three things that we talk a lot about here. He was like a triple winner, if we put it that way. But in any case, with that, I want to welcome John to the show. You're on the air. Thanks, John. Welcome. Glad you're here.
Hey, Kim, thanks for having me. I really appreciate your message and your show, what it does for people. So for my story, it's probably a unique setting is probably what sets it out from most people who have these brain injuries, but anybody that has them is lucky to be here, and everybody's got their own story, and that's one thing. But me, I was at the time, I was a 20-year-old young man. I was deployed. My brain aneurysm ruptured on April 1st, 2003, and I was in Kuwait, just south of Iraq, in which we had invaded just a few weeks prior. And my job at the time, I was working inside of a field hospital. And when I say field hospital, it was just tents, and every direction you looked outside of the tent was sand. There was nothing else around. There was just sand and tents. So I happened to be working that day in the hospital. I had one of those headaches that people will describe as, you know, one of the worst headaches in their life. I was very it was very bad. Probably say one of the worst headaches in my life. And I was working inside the hospital. I probably mentioned to a couple of people in passing, man, my head really hurts. But I couldn't stop to really do anything about it. And last thing I remember is looking down at the ground, and either it spent around three times or I did, and I passed out. So I had, on my way down to the ground somewhere, I struck my head. I fractured my skull. I had a grand mal seizure and brain aneurysm rupture all right there at one point in time. So, so it's kind of like a tale of two cities. You know, you're in the best of times and the worst of times, but I could kind of use it as I was in the worst of places of being in, you know, a few miles away from war, and the best of places being inside of a medical facility when this event happened to me. It couldn't have happened in a better spot, right? Right there in a hospital, I pass out. So that was.
Can I ask
that was
you
it.
Something there
know.
For?
Yeah.
Real quick.
Please ask or interject any questions you have. Yes.
Well, I just wondered, when you say a field hospital and the tents and so forth, in the civilian realm, you know, we're told if we have something akin to that it takes a level one trauma hospital to be able to do brain surgery, that you don't want to just go to any old hospital. You might not find a neurosurgeon. Now, I understand that obviously where you were, people get hurt very badly, but mm-hmm. in a field hospital, is there someone equipped to deal with that kind of occurrence?
No.
Or do you need to be flown
no.
somewhere quickly?
No, I'm not sure how long it took, but I was put on a helicopter and went to the USNS Comfort that was floating out in the Gulf, I suppose that day. So, again, the helicopter knew where to go. There's a hospital. I was already there. So when I was on the boat, I don't have any recollection of that. They kind of understood what had happened, I guess, I suppose. And, like, I hate to say it, but kind of, like, cracked the shell of the egg open to relieve, like, the pressure on my brain. So they kind of cracked my skull open, really, is what I'm trying to say. And I didn't have, outside of that, I didn't have any surgeries, no craniotomy or anything until May. And it took about three weeks for me to make it back to the United States. I can get back to the States April 19th. So I know I bounced around a couple different countries. I don't have much recollection of what it was. I'm sorry?
Nothing. I just said, oh, my God, bouncing around to a couple countries in that state, I can't imagine.
Yeah, I've got a T-shirt I still wear today. It's a Ballrain Wind Tower. So I went to Ballrain at some point. I was the neurosurgeon's only patient. I remember having a couple of like phone conversations, like one with my grandfather. He was asking me questions, and I could not answer anything. All I could say was, I don't know. He was like, you know where you are? Nope, I don't know. Hey, are you in any pain? I couldn't even answer that. I'm like, I don't even know. Like, I couldn't, I don't know. There was just a couple of conversations I remember having on the phone. So I know I went to Germany. I flew out of Germany to back to the States. It was Lonsdale Regional Airport, or I'm sorry, hospital. And I don't think there was anything worth remembering. So that 3 weeks, I just don't think that's why I don't have really any memories, because there just wasn't anything worth remembering. But my family met me at Walter Reed Army Medical Center in Washington, D.C. on April 19th. And then I finally, like, I start to remember some things and act like I had had a brain injury. I was, you know, they say brain injuries make you cuss, and I was one of those. If I could squeeze a cuss word in a sentence, by God, I was going to do it. And I think there's quite a few funny stories from me and things I said and did in the hospital on the medicines and with the head injuries and things like that. Some pretty unique stories, I could say that. So I didn't have surgery until May. I actually came back home, and I was on like a convalescent leave while my surgeon was on leave himself. So like I actually got to come back home to like where I grew up before I had brain surgery. Then I had the craniotomy, and you know that's probably, you know, a pretty scary event. You can imagine someone cutting your skull open. I mean, it doesn't seem pleasant for anyone. But that was the pull, the thing that needed to happen to get me to survive and be who I am today. It wasn't easy. I've struggled with memory things, all sorts of things. There isn't any, like, trying to find the right words in conversations. I struggle with that. Headaches, obviously. Dizziness, you know, probably like everyone else listening to this radio show, and like, yep, I've had done that. You know, I didn't know how long people with brain aneurysms survived back then. So it's like, it's 2003, I'm having surgery, I have no idea. There's not like a community of people, or like Facebook wasn't around for me to even ask somebody. Like, I could ask a doctor and they can go, yeah, right, you live. And, you know, like I had no expectation for how much longer my life was going to last. And then I found, right, several years ago, this brain aneurysm survivors group on Facebook. And I think the time when I joined, there was like 9,500 members. And it was nice to have the community of people you can ask questions. Oh yeah, I did this, or just kind of little life hacks to survive. And, you know, in the group, there's people who live 40, 50, 60 years with after brain, post brain aneurysm rupture. So that was kind of a relief for me to know those things.
Me too. Yeah, I was in the same boat as you. It was really, you know, people today can't imagine it, because now it's been a long time that we've had cell phones, a computer on every desk, social media. But, you know, back when we had ours, people did not have a computer on every desk. In fact, I joke, you know, mine's a little bit older than yours even, that, you know, our computers, I was a financial consultant, and my administrative assistant got the first computer. We called that the updated IBM Selectric. You know, she was the one who typed. And
right,
so, you know, we sold, and she was, you know, the best salespeople are backed up by the best administrative assistant, so, you know, nothing about that. But, you know, it caused me to not be tech savvy. But anyway, we didn't all have a computer on our desk. There was no such thing as social media yet. I can't hardly believe that with all of the stuff that goes on, you know, the issues that go on about social media in this day and age. It feels like it's worn on forever, but we actually lived in a really blessed time where it didn't exist yet. Although you're right, it was nice when we were afforded a way to find other survivors, because it was a very isolating, polarizing kind of event, because I didn't know anybody else who had had an aneurysm. There were no live support group meetings in my city. And I say that, you know, I talked about things that were going on with me, and I know Megan will address this too. A lot of us do, if we don't have an obvious tell afterward. You brought up, and I'll go ahead and read those, and you pointed out a couple of them, but all of us have a couple of these, and you just heard John say his, but I made this list over time and listening to people and myself, but short-term memory loss, trouble focusing our attention, neurofatigue, or running out of energy quicker, dizziness and balance issues, cognitive deficits, which processing things slower than we did before, aphasia, trouble recalling or understanding words, not being able to handle overstimulation, or what we call sensory overload, people, noises, lights, anxiety / depression / possible PTSD. A lot of people end up having chronic pain issues that accompany or are after effects to their brain injuries. Sleep issues is another one that I added, and I think that's 12. And so nobody mentioned to me, and I'm not sure did they to you. I mean, I was having those things, and, you know, I was trying to talk about it, but when I would go to, you know, I had a visiting neurosurgeon. So after he did his magic, and I'm blessed he was in town to be able to do so, but after my couple follow-up visits, he left and went back to wherever he came from. And my internist had misdiagnosed mine. I went 24 hours bleeding in the brain before I got taken back to the hospital, and then they did a scan and found out what was going on. And so I never went back to him. Needless to say, my confidence in him was undermined, and I was pissed off. And in fact, it was kind of funny. I can say one of mine, because I did, well, I can leave the worst expletives out, but, you know, because he was the first one I saw in the emergency room, this was kind of funny. It was January 9th. Mine happened, 1995. Cell phones, this is how old this I was. Cell phones had just started coming out, and they were great big things, like the size of a shoebox, but they were separate. They weren't like hardwired into your car like the ones before that. But it was a great big old thing, and my dad happened to get his first for Christmas. So Christmas of 94, then January 9th, and he happened to be driving that day, and I was riding with him, which is something that never happened. And it was just driving me to an appointment and then asking me to have a cappuccino after. So otherwise, I was always driving every day to my business calls and service calls, and God knows what would have happened. I would have immediately not had control of my car anymore. But he used the phone, his brand new phone from Christmas. He had the doctor's phone number in it and called and got a hold of him and had him meet us at the emergency room. So it was my own family doctor who I had had forever. And, you know, I really had a resentment against him more than I would have a stranger doctor, because he had known me forever and knew I wasn't a hypochondriac, that nothing short of near death would have me in the emergency room, that I called once a year when I got bronchitis or tonsillitis or something in the middle of the winter, Nebraska winter, for an antibiotic. And other than that, you know, my annual physical. So the fact that I would be there in the emergency room, and I'm chattery, as most all of you know, not able to talk because I was in so much pain. You know, I was in shock, in pain. I couldn't express myself. And he diagnosed me as having a muscle spasm in my neck, prescribed painkillers, and sent us home. And again, I was blessed that my dad, looking at me, just said, and I had a home of my own where I would have, had it been happened any other way, I would have gone home and died at home alone. But he said, why don't you come over to, you know, my folks' house until that pain medication kicks in, and then they would take me home. Well, it didn't. You know, it didn't kick in. I just got very sick, started violently vomiting. They called the doctor again, and he said, oh, the pain medication's too strong. Just give her half of one next time. And so that whole night I spent in that same level of pain that you get the minute it happens. That doesn't go away. There was relentless pain. And then this violent vomiting, which had to be pushing that blood, you know, into my brain for 24 hours more. And by morning, I couldn't speak. I couldn't speak any longer, get the words out. At first, I could understand what my mom was saying to me. And after that, I was looking at her, and her lips were just moving, and I couldn't talk or understand her. I was still on my feet at that time, but I'm not sure how, because my brain just really wasn't functioning. And that's when she said, to hell with him, we're going back to the hospital, she ain't right. And you know, just as a mother would do, went back. They did a scan and immediately found out that I had a bleed in process. And so that doctor, because I saw him first, his bill came through first. So it came through as the deductible that I would have been paying. And I did see him one more time after the emergency room that day, and that was when the bill came. And I went to his office and tossed the bill on his desk and said, you'll be writing this off for a bad call and nearly killing me. If you think I'm going to pay this, you're crazy. And he said, you know, these things aren't always easy to tell. And I had a few words to say, and I said, write it off, I'm not paying you it. And he did. And so that took care of my deductible. I figured that was the least he could do for such a bad call. The rest of us, you know, in my job, if I screwed up that bad, I'd be sued or my license would be taken away. When I was a financial consultant, there were consequences for making big screw-ups, like I could have drained your bank account. you know, or screwed up your retirement plan, or, you know, this guy was, you know, playing with my life. And so to think now, and they recommend it, I don't. And I've been chastised for that, but by other survivors. But they do recommend now that people go in and get a scan periodically just to make sure there's nothing hiding. They say that people who have had an aneurysm before are more likely to have another than someone who's never. And I guess I won't say any more about that. The only way, when you said that, I'm still surprised, and then we'll be bringing Megan on in just a couple of minutes, but I'm still really surprised at the difference in how that was done. When you said that you're back overseas for a second, that they cracked your head to relieve the pressure, but that you didn't have surgery, how were they able to do that?
Well, I don't really know, because I was out of it, of course, but I didn't consider that surgery. I don't know. It just seemed like to me like releasing the pressure on something. It's kind of the way it was explained to me. And I've got this like probably 2-inch scar that nobody can see because I have so much hair. And it's like maybe like 1/8 of an inch indention on the front side of my head. And so the craniotomy was on the back side of my skull. But I've got this nice nice scar on the front side of my head. I guess they just – I mean, I don't know. I've got all these horrible images of them, like taking a little hammer and just cracking my skull with them. But how they did it, I don't know. But as far as surgeries I was talking about earlier, like the repairing of what had happened to me, coiling the aneurysm.
No, that's okay.
Things like that.
I get it.
Yeah.
I get it now. Because that was an issue with me, too, that my brain was so swollen. Since it happened on Monday, but they didn't diagnose it till Tuesday, at that time, the one thing that the bad doctor did right was get me this visiting neurosurgeon, and I don't know if he did or not, but get me this visiting ACE neurosurgeon, because microneurosurgical techniques were relatively new. But when he came and talked to my parents, I wasn't married at the time, on that Tuesday, he said her brain is so swollen that, well, she's got to have this surgery or she'll die. But if we try to do it now, there's, you know, it's such a tiny area to work in to begin with, but the swelling is so bad that if we go in now, her chances for a quality of life or living through it are less. But if we give her a medication, that's why I was asking you, because in my case, they gave me some kind of medication for a few days to hope that it brought down that swelling enough for them to have more room to work and to hopefully be able to offer me a better quality of life. But the risk in waiting is that what has already been bleeding in the brain, if it really pops, you're dead on the spot. And so that was the choice my parents had to make on that Tuesday. And they chose, as I would have, to wait and give me the benefit of the doubt of hoping that it would happen like the surgeon said, that the medication would bring the swelling down and that they would have a little more room to work and a better outcome. And so it happened on Monday, got diagnosed on Tuesday, and I had my craniotomy on Friday the 13th. So that was a long week, you know, a long week for my family. And then I didn't wake up. I went into a coma. I remember my mom saying, we're taking her to the hospital. And I just remember one image, and it was sitting in the back seat. And, of course, it's January 9th in Nebraska, so it was really cold and gray, and there was snow out, and the window was frosty. And I had my head, I was sitting in the car, but I had my head against the window praying. I don't know if I was praying to die or just make it stop, but I just remember that image, and then I don't remember anything else for a couple weeks. I was in that, out of it for that first 5 days in a coma, and then for another six after the craniotomy, and then I woke up and was kind of out of it for a day or two. So the only way I think I could have a craniotomy is just the way I did, not knowing I was going to get it, because that ain't nothing right to look forward to. And of course, you wouldn't have been able to look forward to it, but you didn't know what you were in for either. And now, I guess, as far as those scans go, do you get regular scans?
So I'm fortunate to be covered through the Veterans Administration with medical things. So I could, I brought it up within the past 2 years. I said, hey, I don't know. I just want to check. No one's ever checked me. It's been a long time. And they did a scan. I can't remember if it was CAT scan, MRI, whichever one it was. But they said, hey, you're clear. So that concern kind of also trickles down. I've got two daughters now, so it's like, okay, you know, you hear this thing that, you know, brain aneurysms are hereditary. Well, that's the first time I had ever heard of one, was when mine went. So fortunate enough to have my daughters checked out as well, and they're both clear as well. So that's like a giant sigh of relief there. But no, I've had scans through the VA, and everything comes back clean. So it's just like, all right, we'll just keep on, keep going, keep living my life best I can, and trying out any of these things, little things we have or big things we have that hold people up. I try to push through those things and not let it limit me. I don't want to be known as, or have some whatever feelings on some of the disabilities that I carry around. So I just try to be the best version of myself with this post-aneurysm.
So they say it can be genetic. And I mentioned to you, I think it was before the show, that I do a little genealogy. I wasn't aware before of anyone who had had an aneurysm in our family, but like three generations back when I started doing genealogy, there was a, what, three times great grandmother or something that they mentioned had had an aneurysm. There are neurological problems. Frankly, there's more Parkinson's, but not aneurysms. That just wasn't. So I know they can be genetic, but a lot of times, like I was going to ask you, you were downrange. Is it possible that you took a blow to the head, or were you, it sounds like you were in a situation, they usually put hospitals pretty close to where the action is.
Yes.
when I mentioned earlier that blast injuries appear to be the largest hallmark injury of this last conflict, it's proven, you know, that it's had that concussive effect, even if you haven't actually taken a piece of shrapnel or gotten a blow to the head, just the constant blasting. I'm just curious if your aneurysm could have been caused by some kind of a head trauma prior, because that's another way that a person can acquire a brain aneurysm.
Sure. No, not for my particular event. There wasn't any kind of blow to the head before, but like I do remember hearing doctors say, or people say, you know, maybe that like stress has an impact on a brain aneurysm rupturing. Maybe, I don't know, the blood pressure or something could have something to do with that. I didn't, at the time, as a 20-year-old man, a young man, I'm very close to war. I didn't feel like in a tremendous amount of stress. I didn't have anything, bullets or anything whizzing past me. But at the same time, I could name 50 stressful things around me that were going on. So I don't know if maybe
sure.
like it could have been a stress-induced thing. But
probably didn't help.
It probably didn't help. I was, like I said, couldn't have been in a better spot, a better physical location, as opposed to, you know, being in a hospital, field hospital.
Well, thank goodness. Thank goodness. So now you mentioned some of the things that you deal with. Has that changed this whole experience? Silly question for some, but has this changed your life? And do you feel like it's been 20 years? Do you feel like you've adjusted or found whatever compensatory strategies you might need to be able to live comfortably in your skin after this experience?
Absolutely. And you talked about the A's, the four A's, I think you said earlier. The acceptance, mm-hmm. I think, was probably the most difficult for me, that this mm-hmm. thing, this event happened to me. And I remember months afterwards just, you know, like wishing that all this was just a dream. Like I was just dreaming up all this brain injury stuff, and I'm going to wake up and I'm going to be in the sand. And so the acceptance, it took me a long time. I have adapted and done a lot of things throughout my life, I guess, to try to help with that. Like, I don't know, maybe some people say this always happens to them. You park your car at Walmart and you come out of Walmart and then you don't have a daggone idea where you parked. So I found that
yeah.
if I just always parked in the same half of the parking lot at Walmart, I would only at least have to look through half of the parking lot to find a vehicle or whatever. So a simple little life hack there for somebody that suffers with some of those things, short-term memory or whatnot. I've always just tried to push through whatever challenges I had. If I had to study more for a college exam, I would study more just so I retain the information that I'm supposed to retain. Other challenges, the coming, like one of the most frustrating ones, I guess, currently would be coming up with the correct word that you want to say, but you just can't get it out. It's right there,
yeah.
on the tip of your tongue.
Yep.
but you just can't find it. And that's a real struggle, and it seems like I don't know how you overcome it. Maybe you have a broader vocabulary, but I don't know. It still happens. I'm terrible with names. Terrible. And
oh, God, me too.
terrible, and it's I don't know if I get if I well, it's because I have brain injuries, you know, I have a brain injury that I rely on that, or if it's just me, I don't know. So
no, I do that too. It is what it is. I just say I'm really bad with names. I apologize, and if I screw up too many times in an exchange of, you know, maybe there's an acronym HALT: hungry, angry, lonely, tired. If I'm any one or a combination of those things, I'm more likely to have more screw ups at a time. So if I'm having a conversation with somebody who doesn't know about me already, and I call them the wrong name or can't place their name, and then I grab a couple totally wrong words and insert them without even knowing. I mean, in my brain, I see the word I'm meaning to say, like, you know, are you enjoying your new house? Oh, you know, this was one. My husband and I went to the eye doctor yesterday, and, you know, they give you the drops to dilate your eyes.
Mm-hmm.
And had just gotten mine. It was sitting out in the waiting room, and my husband had gone in, and there was a nice woman sitting out there, and her name for short, I don't know what her long name was, and you'll know why I remember this. Her name for short was Eddie. They called her Eddie, and our new puppy's name is Eddie. And I said, yeah, my husband's here too. He's been getting... I'm sorry, he's been getting violated. I meant dilated, right?
Right, that's funny.
So I knew what I meant to say, but I looked at the lady like, you know, like a horrified look on my face, and we both just started laughing, and she made a joke out of it, which was great because she has no idea about me. I said, yeah, those eye drops really not only mess up my vision, but I guess I can't think straight afterward. But she said, violate, that's so funny. And so she was making a joke about that. I'll have to tell my husband that when I go home. But there was another gal at the eye doctor's office who said her husband was in getting violated. So, you know, if too many things like that happen in one exchange, that was cool. We let it fly. She doesn't know I have a brain injury. But I will say it, but one time another survivor said, you know, and a lot of times I was just chalking mistakes up to brain injury. And this guy, I don't know if he was just in one of those moods that brain injury people get into, but he said, you don't always have to use your injury as an excuse. Well, you know, I never really have in the context I felt like he meant that shot. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was kind of mean of him to say, but, you know, since then, it kind of took me back to the beginning where I talked about things that were going on with me, but people who couldn't see and who were told I was cured, whatever, you know, after the event when I had the brain surgery and it fixed me, even, you know, parents and that, when I was too tired to make it to an event that I, you know, had committed to or booked too many events. This was back before I learned my new limits and new boundaries. You know, they think that you're playing possum or not telling the truth or making an excuse or whatever, making more of something than it is. And so I just stopped talking for a decade or so. And then I felt free, dumb, as you did when we happened into a cyber world full of people who had been through the same thing and who understood, you know, who didn't even question it when we said any of those things. Oh, yeah, that happens to me. Oh, yeah, that happens to me. And that really helps to not, you know, undermine the self-esteem. And I don't use my brain injury as an excuse to not do things I can do or use it in that kind of way. But among a brain injury crowd, sometimes I'll say, chalk it up to the brain injury. And it's a joke. It's meant to be a joke.
Sure.
You know,
not
a joke among friends, not a way of getting out of something that I'm supposed to do. I do the things that I commit to when I can. And if I can't, there's a real good reason for it. And that's not very often. I think in the 12 and a half years on the air, I've only not been here 6 times, and 4 of those were when my husband and I had the opportunity to go out of town for our anniversary. And so, you know, I take my commitments pretty seriously, but I also have a brain injury, and when I can't do something, I can't, you know, and that's okay, because it's opened the doors to being able to experience life in a way that was different than I was doing before. And I've had the opportunity to do a lot of different things that I wouldn't have done before, like write 2 books, become a radio host, a disability advocate. A lot of the things I've done, I had been a financial consultant 25 years, and I probably would have done it until I retired and just had the same life that I had before, but, you know, I have made the necessary adjustments and have really enjoyed the broader base, experiential base, you know, that it's afforded my life. So in any case, John, thank you so much for being here tonight and for sharing with us. It's been really a pleasure meeting you, and I hope that we can stay in touch and you'll come back again in the future. And I appreciate you coming on and sharing, not knowing me and without much notice. It was really great to have you and meet someone new. And thank you again,
Candace,
very much for your sacrifice and service for our country.
Do it all over again, without a doubt. And I appreciate you having me.
All right. Well, I will put you on hold, and if you need to get off to bed, you can certainly do that. I'm going to be bringing, but I want to thank you for being here, John. Just to separate John and Megan, I'm going to bring Megan on. There's kind of a interesting story. Ron, all this in the chat room down there, but I had an artist, as I said, before I came to Brain Injury Radio, I had written a book about my experience, and I had made a book trailer, and the music I chose was by an artist, a Canadian artist named Leah West, L-E-A-H-W-E-S-T, leahwest.com, or she's got some really awesome videos on YouTube, and I used her for my book trailer. And then when I wound up becoming a radio host, she was one of my first indie artists on my playlist, and I always played one of her songs as my outro. Leah was single at the time our relationship began, and then I got to see her vis-a-vis Facebook get married. Looks so happy. I remember her wedding pictures, and Her husband's name was Mark, and they were married a little while. I don't know, I'm bad with time, like names, but a year or two. And they had a beautiful little baby boy. And he was probably, I don't know when they start walking, but he was probably about 1 year old. Blue is the little boy's name. And Mark was very athletic and went out for a bike ride. Ironically, I'm going to be bringing Leah, Megan on. I was going to call Leah, but I just didn't. This was a couple years ago now, and it was just his birthday not long ago. Maybe I should have gotten a hold of her, but I didn't. In any case, my thoughts and prayers are always with her because she had never heard of a brain aneurysm. And when I asked her if I could play her music on my playlist, on my radio show, as the trailer for my book, yes, 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 just a very kind, sweet woman. And so I was playing her music, and a lot of you really love her a lot. And then her husband, Mark, goes out on a bike ride and has a brain aneurysm rupture and dies. That quick. Just died. And their little boy will never know his father. And so it's been a very difficult time for the people left behind. This new wife, baby son who will never know his dad, except through the memories of his mom and the photographs and the rest of his family. And so my thoughts and prayers always go out to Leah. Sometimes I feel kind of guilty. I know we didn't have anything to do with it, but geez, this beautiful artist never knew what an aneurysm was doing an act of kindness toward our group to let me play her music, happens to get married, and her husband happens to have an aneurysm we're alive to tell, and he just died that day. She got a phone call, and that was it. Her life has had a lot of adjustments since then, but again, you can check out her music at leahwest.com or YouTube. She's got some gorgeous videos on YouTube. But I'm going to play a song called Speechless, and then by Leah West, and send up some thoughts and prayers for Leah and her little boy. And then I'll come back and bring on Megan.
A spark to a fire to a love. sight from a spark to a fire to a blaze. Got my eyes locked in again. You left me speechless. Don't. You left me speechless. You left me.
Again, that was Leah West with Speechless. And do check her out, leahwest.com, or some of her beautiful videos on YouTube. Been quite a while since she's done music. She's busy being a mom right now. But lots to see and experience. With that, I'm going to bring on our anniversary girl tonight. 5 years out from her experience. Megan, thanks so much for coming. I know that you were suffering fall allergy symptoms earlier and got some medicine and showed up suited up. I appreciate that.
Oh, yeah. Hi, Kim. I'm great. Feeling much better, and it's really great to be here.
Happy to have you. So 5 years, congratulations on being 5 years out. So it probably makes you feel good, too, to hear John out 20 years and me out. God, I wasn't good at math, honestly, before I even had my brain injury. But 2022.
Me either, never
happened. I know. So whenever, oh, we're not in, what did I say, 2022 minus 1995. Anyway, a long-ass time. So
I think it's great. It actually makes me feel, I think when you first have one of these things, after you process whatever you can possibly process within the first year, then you start wondering, am I going to die early? Am I going to die soon? Yeah, I know. That's the next thing that kind of hits you.
Yes, yes. So tell the people who don't know, which is most of the people, I'm sure some who know you from the social media posts, but tell us a little bit about your story.
Well, I by the way, I love the woman's voice. That was a beautiful song, like her husband, sadly, who passed away. I was on a routine bike ride home. You know, I go the same streets, the same, I knew exactly, you know, the destination, the road I was going to take through the neighborhoods. And I was just coasting along on a beautiful September evening. It wasn't late. It was just kind of before dark, you know, beautiful night. And it was just strange. It was so surreal. It was almost like looking back on it and processing it, and I'm a writer, so I've written about it. It's like this weird sense of calm kind of came over me, and I was very aware of my surroundings in a very strange way. It was almost surreal. And then suddenly it just happened. And of course, you know, when the brain hemorrhage happens, we have no idea what's happening to our body. But we do know we're in trouble. I think at least I knew instantly. And that really was what saved my life, is that I knew that something so huge was happening to me and so foreign, and somehow my survival instincts, I knew I had to get help immediately. And so luckily I live in a city in Minneapolis, and I was very close to urban, you know, I just had to go up through, I was in the neighborhood, and I just had to cut up to the busy street where all the shops and restaurants and things like that are. So I was only about a block and a half off of, you know, the busy area. And I just pulled up to a coffee shop, and I was on a city bike. I think they pretty much have them in all the cities now where you rent these bikes to ride around. And I just handed this guy at a coffee shop, I handed him the bike and I just said, call me an ambulance. I mean, I just didn't know what else to do, but
you
I'm
know.
So grateful that I was so grateful that I knew that I needed an ambulance, you know. And people always mm-hmm. tell me, they're like, wow, how did you know? I really don't know. By the grace of God, I guess I knew that I needed an ambulance. And so I was just kind of like, okay. And he's like, are you sure? And I was in shock, like you were saying, you were in shock. And the pain is so weird because there's no way to describe it really unless you've experienced it. But it does kind of take you over. It takes over like a force, and it's so
yeah.
acute, and you're in some kind of state of whatever. We don't really know how to even describe it. You know, it's so bizarre, and it grips you in a way where you really don't doubt that you're in big, big trouble. And so luckily, I
exactly.
live in an urban area, and the ambulance came very quickly. And I, too, like you said, I vomited in the ambulance right before the hospital. I was, you know, violently vomiting. And I was thinking about this when you were talking about that. I was so grateful for these paramedics because I think they probably knew by looking at my pupils and taking all the vitals, they probably had I described to them the fierce neck pain, head pain, and then the vomiting, and I'm sure they put two and two together and probably were halfway there solving the issue. You know, I never really thought about it, but do you know what I mean? Like, they probably knew what was going on. And then they, you know, when I entered the hospital, my medical records say I arrived unresponsive and moaning, and I do remember fading out in the gurney rickety stretcher. I remember kind of fading in and out as I entered the hospital. And I remember looking up at people staring at me, and I remember them kind of wheeling me out of the ambulance. And then the next thing I remember, I woke up in the ICU, and my mother and a very close best friend of mine was there. and then I did go through a phase where, you know, I read my medical records. And there's chunks of things that happened when I was in the hospital that I have no recollection of, that they stated I was screaming and saying I was going blind. I don't remember saying that, you know, stuff like that. So it's interesting.
I know. And when you said that you knew you needed an ambulance, I could relate to that too, because when I was in the car and that struck me, I drew in my arms and my legs, you know, like if someone came up and clocked you, if you weren't going to automatically punch back, you know, you kind of pull yourself into a jellyfish kind of position, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Take cover. And I whelped or something. I made a noise. I squealed or something. And my dad said,
mm-hmm.
what's wrong? And I said, I need to go to a hospital, as clear as
mm-hmm.
day. And it was just like you saying,
yeah,
I need
know.
An ambulance.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it that it's not like, you know, if you've ever had stitches or broken a bone or something like that, those are obvious. You go into shock, that hurts like crazy, but this is something
mm-hmm.
that you just know it's out of your control.
And what's weird about it, like you say, people describe it as the worst headache of your life, but I think it's so much bigger than that. As you were saying, and I wrote about this in my story that I know you've read, my short essay,
Yeah.
You know, you almost detach from reality because you're in this state, your body's in this state that is so foreign and so bizarre that it's almost like, there's no way to even describe it. And it is pain, but you're so outside of yourself, kind of like wondering, You know what I mean? Like, you're processing things, and it's a very strange state to be in. And luckily, I don't know. I really, to this day, my neck has never, ever been the same. And I had really bad headaches when I came home from the ICU, and I didn't think they'd ever go away, but they did. And boy, am I lucky. You know, I didn't think I could live with the headaches that I came home with. I mean, and I was really, I was laying on ice packs for about 3 weeks. Nothing took the pain away, really. And you're in a new world and you think, how can I live like this? But somehow, God, I'm so lucky my headaches went away, because I know people like Rico and others in our group, they talk about they still have headaches all these years later. I don't know if I could function. I don't even know if I'd want to be around. Not that I'm suicidal, but I can't imagine still having headaches, you know?
Mm-hmm. I get them, but not like that, and not that frequently. It's hard to remember that. So what about some of the other things on the list? Let's go through the...
Oh, God,
well,
I had so many of those. I'm glad you read those. The ones that I had initially, what was that? Oh, I have very bad short-term memory, big time. And I had my anxiety.
Trouble focusing.
Oh, God. Trouble focusing.
Wait, you're going up my list the other way.
Concentration.
Trouble focusing your attention. Neurofatigue.
Yes, and all of it, yeah. And then the neurofatigue got better, and the post-traumatic stress got better. The anxiety got better. However, I still have that sensory overload really bad. And the work I do in a restaurant is insane, because restaurants, when they're busy, it's like they're insane. They're insane on all levels. And I can't believe that I can function in the insanity that I work in. But luckily they, you know, it goes in waves. It's not that way every minute, you know, but, when it's at its peak in the restaurant business, it's like, oh my God, this is too much. And so if I have a long day and at the end of the day, if I'm on overload, I can barely function and I have to get out of there fast. And it gets hard for me if I have too long of a day, but I can still get through it. And I drink a lot of water while I'm working, because there's nothing worse than going through all that and not having enough water in your body, you know, drink hydration. Do you know what I'm saying? So.
Good point. What about cognitive deficits, like processing things slower than before? You know, I've noticed it a lot trying to write this particular book, but in general, I would say that before my brain injury, I could multitask like a big dog. I could, you know, juggle six balls in the air without missing a beat and having one come down. And now, unless I want them to all fall, I can do a couple things, but I really need to be much more, and this was one of my compensatory strategies, I guess. I have to be a lot more mindful when I'm doing more than one thing, or I'm not going to do it well, or I'm going to forget part of it, or it just isn't going to come off the way it was before. So I have to be more focused and pay more attention than I did before. And I do process things slower because of that mindful intention that I didn't even have to think about before. I just did it. Do you have any of that?
I think I still process things rapidly, but I do know that I feel like my attention span and my concentration is bad, but I don't know how to explain it. Sometimes I'm just stuck, and I think John was saying, that was his name. See, I already forgot his name. Was it John who was just on?
Yes. Yes.
Thank you. I'm glad I remembered it. That's another thing you guys were talking about, names. I don't remember anyone's names except my family and close friends. I don't know anyone else's name, but I remembered his name. But now I forgot what I was going to say. This is funny because now I forgot what I was going to say about him, but I remembered his name. But anyway, okay.
We were
talking
about processing.
Oh, yeah, but he was
you
talking
and I were
about
talking
something
about
that rang a bell with me, and now I've already forgotten. This is a fine example of what you were asking me. Yeah.
Let's see. It wasn't sensory overload. He talked about aphasia, trouble recalling, well, words like names and things like that, or grabbing the wrong word you covered.
Oh, that's it. I noticed this. This was really hard for me in the very beginning, mostly the first year or two. It's gotten a little better, but I'm always looking for a word, and it's like I know the word, but I really have to think about it and grab the word like it's floating around, and I'm looking for it, and then I find it and pick it, take it in my hand and pull it, and before it would just rattle. I could just flow effortlessly, and I struggle with a word here or there. I also sometimes, I don't know if it's from stress or just something else, but I tend to flub up words on occasion, which, you know, makes me wonder if I'm having another stroke or something. But, I mean, I'm not going to get crazy paranoid or anything, but I do flub up words on occasion and feel like I'm a little tongue-tied, and I don't know if that has to do with what happened to my brain. And maybe that happened before, but it seems like it happens more often now, a little bit. Does that ever happen to you?
Oh, yeah, and I chalk mine up to aging. I'm a lot older than I was before.
You're not that old, Kim. How old?
Well, I mean, I actually am, and I think here's my take, and I don't know if the websites have caught up with this or not. I can only measure myself. And that's that, okay, so like I have this healthy 35-year-old brain and I have this incident happen, and then these things that we were just talking about, this list of three things that kind of compromise or slow down my brain, I feel like that experience aged my brain. So instead of having that fresh, snappy 35-year-old brain that I had before it got blood in its crevices and blew up, I feel like my brain was maybe operating at, say, 10 years older or better. You know, and now that I'm early 60s, I just think that my brain, like you, and I don't mean this to discourage anyone, and everybody is different, but you mm-hmm. know, you've known people that were aging before, and they get forgetful, and they have some of the things that we're talking about just naturally from aging.
Mm-hmm.
I guess what I would
well, I know,
say
it's hard
is
when
that
you're kind of at, like I'm in my late 50s, 57. So you kind of wonder, is this a little bit of old age? Is it menopause? Is it this? Is it that? Is it all of these things plus the fact that I had a brain hemorrhage? I mean, so I know what you mean. Like I intertwine a lot of that.
I think it is
at my age. And I think you're right about all of them. And because sometimes when you talk to friends that haven't had brain hemorrhages, you know, which is pretty much everybody you know, except in our groups, they, you know, they say, oh, I forget things all the time too. Oh, da-di-da-di-da. And I don't try to make, I'm sorry, I sounded really bratty there, but I'm not making light of what they're saying. I believe that that's valid and that's the reality. But they have, it still amazes me how many people think that we're just normal fine because we're walking and talking. They don't really comprehend it. And you know what? Nor should they. Why would they? I mean, but there is a lack of, I don't want to say sympathy because I'm certainly not asking for any, but there's a lack of understanding. And that
yeah.
is very clear when your closest people in your life that you've known forever and ever say, I just told you that. Why don't you remember? I told you that yesterday. You've already told me that. And it's kind of like, those are frustrating things. It's like, yeah, do you remember I had a brain injury, you know, and you want to tell them off because it's like they don't understand that this something happened there. And yes, I did forget. Yes, I may have told you that 10 times. Maybe I repeated myself a little bit before the injury, but it's worse now, and I'm older. And then you kind of wonder, gee, and you get lost in that whole circle. Do you agree?
Do agree, and I was going to say exactly what you said I could relate to, but where the payback is not when they notice, it's when you start noticing them getting more forgetful than they've ever been. When you start catching them grabbing a wrong word or whatever, they might not even realize that that's going on. It's happening maybe subconsciously for them as they're aging without a brain injury.
Exactly.
Because then, yeah, they truly are. They are forgetting too, because they're getting older. Their brain is aging, you know, but I do relate to the context in which you were saying it. And I think, you know, that might be now that we're, some of us here are a little bit older, that might be a good way to describe it to people that I wouldn't have known to do before, but that brain injury for a lot of us has the effect of prematurely aging our brain in some ways. Like certainly you've known, not you, but as you're putting it to them,
mm-hmm.
you know, certainly you've known people like a grandparent or, you know, an older mentor that you've noticed, you probably don't want to say isn't banging on all eight anymore, but
yeah,
I
mean, I have a lot of older friends in my life. I've always had elderly friends. My best friend, she's 87. I've known her since I was 24. And when I met her, she was like 50-ish, you know. And she once in a while forgets things here and there. And but, I mean, she's 87. She should be forgetting a few things or repeating something. So, she, you know, there you don't really call people out on that when they're older. My mother, she's, you know, in her 80s. And so it's kind of like if my mom forgets something or repeats herself, it's like, of course, well, you're 80-something. That's what you should be doing, you know. But, no, it's true.
But that's kind of what we are doing, though. That's what we should be doing after we've had a brain injury.
Yeah, so it's interesting. Another thing, too, I was going to say, you guys were talking about, what I'm amazed at is some of these stories that everyone talks about, like you were, you know, I can't remember the timelines exactly, but you guys had your brain bleeding for so much longer before an intervention was made. And I'm like, how are you all even still alive? Because my biggest, they told me I was so darn lucky that I got there so fast and that, you know, they did everything really quick. And that's why they told me I looked really good, meaning who would look good after a brain injury? Well, when I started walking down the halls of the hospital, when they got me up and walking, everybody else was on a ventilator like a vegetable. Of course I looked good, you know what I mean? And so even the nurses' station, they were like, you almost look too good to be in here. And when the nurses told me that, I realized that I was really, even though I was weak, even though I was suffering, compared to other people in there with brain injuries, believe me, I was doing really good. And somehow I passed all those tests and I got out of there in 2 weeks and they let me come home. And that didn't mean coming home was easy. And that didn't mean putting on my socks and underwear and tying my shoes was the biggest task of my life. Like I was, you know, a newborn just learning how to tie my shoes or something. But I mean, I could barely function. I couldn't even walk up a half a flight of stairs to my apartment. I couldn't, you know, all I did was lay low for like 2 months. I didn't do anything. I think it was about, it was longer than that, but I mean, but compared to these other people that had to go to rehab and physical therapy, learn how to walk, learn how to talk, I mean, I didn't have to do any of that. I just had to learn how to get stronger and rest, you know? And does that make sense? Like, I'm lucky. I realize
yes.
how lucky I am, you know?
Yes. I was
yeah.
halfway. Yeah, I do. And I feel fortunate in that way also. I was supposed to go to rehab for 6 weeks, but I didn't. And then my parents offered to let me stay there and they would take me. And I love and appreciate the heck out of my parents. But my mom being a good Italian mother was a hoverer. And I don't know if you're like me, but I'll just speak for myself. I didn't have a lot of patience, and I didn't know if I was on foot or horseback after what I had just gone through.
Oh, no,
through.
I was so mean and so rotten, and I was really nasty to the nurses. I was so mean
thank
to my mother. I didn't add that in. I stayed at my mom's, too. She didn't want me to stay at my apartment, and I was like, but I'm so independent, and I had a cat, and I had someone taking care of my cat, but I was stubborn, and I was so nasty when I came home, and I was so mean in the hospital. I was horrible. I even wrote the nurses and the team apology letters, and they're like, oh, we see that kind of behavior all the time. Well, so it made me feel better, but at the same time, I mean, I was an awful, nasty person in the hospital and when I got home.
No,
so, hey,
thank
you.
You. Yeah, no, I was too at the hospital. You know, I don't even like Jell-O. I didn't think about that until you said it. But they brought me a tray that had green Jell-O on it. And
yeah.
I was in a lot of pain that day. And the nurse said something about, I asked her if I could do something. Oh, if they could wash my hair. They did that brain surgery and left brain matter in my hair.
Oh.
And,
yeah.
you know, I was kind of a Barbie or whatever the woke people want to call it these days. I'll proudly
oh, yeah, yeah.
claim it. You know,
yeah.
screw it.
Yeah.
You know, I wanted, if you've ever got brain matter in your hair, Mrs. Woke, you'd want to be a Barbie too. But
exactly. Well, I'm
just,
glad that you, because
yeah.
I've seen so many pictures of you with all your beautiful hair and somehow there you were aware that you wanted it washed. I wasn't as on top of those things as you. They told me at some point they
well,
put
they
like
wouldn't.
A... Well, they okay,
they
the
wouldn't.
Nurse put like a tub of water in front of me and she goes, well, you haven't had a bath since you've been in here. You should take a, you want to take a sink bath or a, like a sink bath. They put some tub of water up on my thing, the tray that I was eating on. And I was like, really? I said, no, I'm not doing that. And then at some point, right, like a day or two before I got out of the hospital, they let me go into the shower. But I don't even remember what I looked like, what I smelled like. I had no concept of what was going on. I think I looked in the mirror once, and that was it, and I didn't want to. I had a tube coming out of my brain. I was attached
yeah.
to an IV pole. I didn't really want to look in the mirror, you know. And I just know that people that came in and saw the tube coming out of my brain, visit my visitors. Some of them commented, and I'm like, yeah, well, where they go, what's that? I go, well, that's the blood mixed with my cerebral spinal fluid draining out of my brain. Woo, that's that. That's
oh,
about all.
Oh, God. Well, I don't even remember when I cleaned up, but, I mean, I actually had brain matter in my hair, so it wasn't just vanity, it was gross.
Terrible.
You know, I had half my head shaved and this brain matter and what was left of my hair, it was gross. So I asked the nurse about washing my hair, but I was on morphine, and so I also wasn't in my right mind, and she told me no, and the way she said it, I picked up my green Jell-O, which I hated anyway, and I threw it at her. And
oh,
I'll never forget
good.
The
you were,
image.
You were as bad as I was. It's nice to know.
Yeah, that's why I asked and I thanked you, because I started to tell a different story about my mom's, which I'll tell real quick. But that Jell-O, I'll never forget the image. The jello missed her head and hit the wall, and then it shimmied down the wall. It seemed like it was in slow mo, the way the block of green jello was going down. And, you know, she just left the room, and I don't even remember what happened after that. But when I was at my folks, I was supposed to be there 6 weeks, and in the third week, I went for one of my follow-up exams to the neurosurgeon, and I begged him to let me go home. And I lived in my own home by myself, and I just said, I can't do this. You know, I'm used to living on my own. I understand why she's hovering, but, you know, I just want to put my fist through a wall. I want to go home where it's quiet. And I
think I threw things at the wall. And when I was staying at my mom's, I remember there was a morning where I, you know, they say your senses are either enhanced or diminished when you have a brain injury. Well, mine were enhanced. So weird smells and different things were making me want to vomit. And I didn't know what was going on, because you don't learn all those things when you leave the hospital. Like, I didn't know that my taste buds and my sense of smell were hyper-exaggerated. And I was easily vomiting. And, you know, I just remember my mom was trying to be so nice to me, and she wanted to make me something to eat. And I think I threw something at the wall, not at her, just out of frustration. I was so angry. I threw something at the wall, and I was really nasty and mean to some nice people in the hospital. I mean, I was like evil. I think I was an evil, nasty person. That's why I wrote an apology note to the hospital. They put it on their blog, and they basically said, we see this kind of behavior, especially when it comes to, you know, traumatic brain injury. So they're used to it. They're prepared for it. They're ready for it. But then nonetheless, we don't realize that that's normal behavior. Apparently it is. Did you know that? I learned that because of the nice people at the hospital that told me that later, you know, later on when I wrote that letter to them. And I thanked them for saving my life and all the care they gave me. And I apologized for being so awful. And even my sister told me, she's like, oh, Megan, you were so awful. When she'd come visit, she said, I can't believe how you were acting. I said, yeah, I was just horrible. And so it's kind of good that we're talking about that, because I think a lot of people out there, maybe when they come home, they reflect back on their behavior, and maybe they don't realize that those people get trained for Gus, you know?
Well, yeah, and I know my dad, they were really, really, really good to my family, because they're, you know, at the time, I had a lot of friends. I was in a lot of social groups, and all of the family, like the waiting room was full a lot of the time, and I was in ICU, so they couldn't really see me. And so my parents got a lot of support when I was in the ethers for all that time. And the staff there was really nice to my folks. So I think that my dad took me up there one day to thank them all for saving my life, like you say. But I didn't remember them. I didn't remember these nurses or anybody. I remembered my surgeon. And, you know, when I got out, I had to go see him for, and actually I didn't remember him because I was unconscious when I met him. It wasn't until those follow-up visits where I really, I could get a grasp on his face then and thanked him. But when they took me up to the hospital, I did not remember those nurses, and I didn't remember the jello episode right away until a little bit later. I know that I was mean with my mom, and I think they are trained now to do that. If they were in 95, they didn't say. But then I didn't apologize either, because I didn't remember. And the one thing that we are at that
really remember,
time,
I wouldn't remember any of the nurses' faces, but I remember there were several of them. And I do remember one, I told one that she was my favorite nurse, and even my family and friends were cracking jokes like, they said, "Oh, Megan, these nurses, they draw straws on who has to take care of you. They know how bad you are," something. Like, I was getting teased, and I remember people, like, I think my mom or my sister, somebody said that to me, like, "Oh yeah, they draw straws because they don't want to deal with you. They're you know," and I was, you know, in the ICU on tons of drugs, but I remember the jokes. And I also remember one nurse, for some reason, she was from, I think she must have been from Africa or something, and she was the sweetest lady, and she basically had a whole different approach with me. And for some reason, I was really, she was so kind and so sweet and so loving in a different way than any of these American nurses were. And for some reason, I liked her because she was different and refreshing and had a whole different approach to her job. And I could tell, I could pick up on the energy of the nurses that hated me, and they knew I hated them, and all the other weird people that would come in, like the caseworkers and the people that wanted to set up this and that. And I remember feeling the energy. And one thing that I learned when I was researching the book Stroke of Insight, I was watching a video of Oprah interviewing, what's the name of the woman who wrote that, the Harvard neuroscientist?
Jill Bolte.
Yeah, that's it. She was on Oprah, and I watched that interview, and she was talking, Oprah was talking about how she said, be responsible about the energy you bring into the room. And I get that, because whoever comes into that room, when you're on your back with a tube coming out of your brain, you're vulnerable. And whether it's the guy who's, you know, changing your catheter bag of pee, or the person who's just coming in to bring your, drop your tray of food off, or whoever else, you're vulnerable. And when these people enter the room, they need to be responsible for the energy they're bringing in. And even your family members and your friends. And I remember kicking my mom out of the room and my best friend. And because my sister died in a hospital in 2004, my mother's fear of me dying was so strong that I couldn't handle her energy, because she was really morbidly, melodramatically depressed, and her energy was fear and death. And so I kicked her and my friend out, and they came together. So that's why I kicked them both out, because I was picking up on that energy. So each person that comes into your room, and each person that's handling your body and all the different, you know, mechanisms and things that you're hooked up to, they need to be responsible for the energy they're bringing in. And then we're reacting to their energy, I'm thinking, but at the same time, you can't blame them for our crazy behavior. But I picked up on a lot of funky, weird energy in the hospital. I wasn't comfortable having someone in the middle of the night, for example, because we don't know what time it is, you know, when you're in the ICU. You don't know if it's day, night. I remember being wheeled out of my room by a total stranger to go get a brain scan, and it was definitely in the middle of the night at some time. And that was a really vulnerable position for me, to be put in a wheelchair, taken out of my bed where none of my nurses are anyway, and put in an elevator. I mean, I could have been put in a car and taken to another country, you know? And I remember being afraid, even though he was, quote, a hospital worker, I wasn't comfortable. Does that make sense? And I was very
freaked out that
a stranger was wheeling me out of my hospital room, and I had no idea. I knew they said you're going to get a brain scan, but you know what? I wish somebody that I knew or trusted, or the nurse on duty, would have taken me, rather than just calling this random person to take me in the middle of the night to, you know, it's just spooky. Does that make sense? Spooky.
Oh, God,
so,
yes, absolutely.
Some strange man,
I mean,
just taking me away. I mean, think about it. That's a horrifying experience. Yeah.
It really is. Yeah, it definitely really is, the whole thing. You know, you just don't know. I mean, it's not like anything you've ever experienced before. So, you know, I would encourage people from the experience that I had, not just if you have a headache, but as Megan and I just described it, and John also described it the same way, although he used that worst headache analogy. But I would insist, if I had it to do over, knowing now what I didn't mm-hmm. know then, is even in that state of shock, that takeover, alien takeover that you were talking about,
yeah.
where we're not in our right mind. If you're out there and you ever have something that you intuitively know really bad, really not normal, like an axe just got buried in your head, or a bolt of lightning just reverberated
mm-hmm.
through your head and isn't stopping, and it's continuing at the same ferocious pounding pace that you can't think straight. If you can spit it out, insist that you be given a scan. That would have saved 24 hours for me of blood seeping into my brain and that swelling going on, and I would have had the surgery.
So, Kim, let me ask you this. Did you have like a slow
sooner.
Leaking bleed or a full-blown rupture later, or was it even, so did you have like a leak and then it boomed later, or was it, because mine was just a big boom without any warning. So yours sounds like it was more like leaking at first, was it?
Well, my understanding is that a big boom kills you, but there must have been a tear that started the leakage, because it was a, like you say, an out of the blue. I mean, I got up feeling normal that day. I hadn't been feeling ill. Nothing had been wrong with me.
Yeah, I had
and
no
just
symptoms
like you,
either. Yeah.
It just that. The symptom was, I'm dying, I think. You know,
mm-hmm.
I didn't say that to myself.
I wrote about it in my story that I knew that I was, I think we know we're dying and we know we need to get to the hospital, because how would we be able to put all that together so quickly if, I think we just, it's our survival instincts that we just know
yes.
that this is, we're on the way out, and we were on the way out, but we lived.
Yes, yes,
mm-hmm.
and for that I'm grateful. Well, we're down to the last 5 minutes. Megan, again, congratulations on 5 years, and as you've heard tonight, you have every reason to look forward to, you know, another 20, 30 years. It's a horrifying experience to have. All of us tonight that have talked have had residuals that we've had to learn to deal with, but I think we would all
mm-hmm.
tell you not to quit, to keep the faith, and that you will learn to rework things that you used to do naturally or take for granted,
mm-hmm.
that you will learn workarounds and have a quality of life worth living as long as you set your mind to it. If you want to stay in a depressed place and pine about loss, and I think we all do go through, I want to say real quick, I think we all do go through a grieving process afterward for the life that we had before in this mortality-facing event that we went through, that's going to impact a person. I mean, we were bulletproof, you know, at that point
mm-hmm.
in our life. You know, might have broke something, might have had some stitches, something like that. But something like those events are real game changers, come to Jesus moments in a person's life. And I think mm-hmm. we do go through a grieving process, but then comes a time we need to make a choice. And that choice is, our life was spared. Do we want to be back in the game and figure out, be proactive in our life and figure out what tools we need, look around, ask around, try different things. Some will work, some won't. There'll be some discouragement. There'll
really
be some frustration.
Oh, I'm sorry. Whoops.
No, that's okay. We'll have some discouragement and frustration.
Oh, I was just going to say, I think it's really important to tell people that you do get stronger as time goes on, and your body does miraculously overcome a lot of these things, and you get stronger. And if you look back to your first year out and then just how far you've come, there is progress, and progress continues, and there is hope for people, because it gets better, and it does. I really believe that, and you have to tell people that. Maybe it's their first year or two into it. In a year or two more, you're going to be even better. You're going to be even stronger.
Absolutely. And I think that's a great point. And we have a lot of choice in leaning into that or staying in the pity pot. And as long as we've been spared and given the gift of life, unlike some, like Leah's husband that I mentioned tonight, he didn't have a choice. It happened and he was gone. And it impacted everyone in his family.
Like yeah. Yeah.
You know, we have the opportunity to keep our life. And so it's incumbent on us, and we have some choice in how we choose to conduct it and learn to cope and keep going. And in the meantime, we become an advocate for others. Because once we've been through the experience, we're one of those understanding people out in the world or in the chat rooms or in the support mm-hmm. groups that are people that have been there before. And I thank God for those people I didn't meet for over a decade, and how lonely and polarizing that was versus getting connected later on with people who made me not feel like I was the only one. And that's the purpose of this network, is for people to mm-hmm. know that they're not alone, that there is hope ahead. And so anyway, we're down to the last couple seconds. Thank you,
well, Kim,
Megan,
I'm
for
so
being here. I wanted
you
to
had me on. It's always nice to be here once a year to celebrate awareness and a sense of community for all of us and all of the people's loved ones that are, you know, that go through this with their loved ones. And it's a great community, and you're a big part of it. Your show is awesome. Thank you.
Oh, thank you, as is yours. Now, I wanted, as are you.
I don't have a show yet. Maybe I will someday right now.
Yeah, definitely,
no,
definitely.
Yeah.
I wanted to play an outro song, actually, for you, because I know that with tomorrow being the first day of fall, I know Halloween is your favorite holiday.
Oh, yes.
And
you love it, too.
So
I always feel
song,
your beautiful decorations. And yeah.
I do, and I got a new doll coming this. Gary doesn't know
yet.
He's going
to
die when this.
Picture of her. Yeah.
Oh, I will. I will. But the song I'm going to play out happens to be, and a lot of you may not know this, but Craig, who owns the station, pays the bill here at Brain Injury Radio, got extremely sick. What I think and what his doctors say are different, but he's been really sick, and let's say that it was perhaps in my opinion, maybe a long post-COVID syndrome. He did have it three times, and the last two times in pretty short proximity, but his doctors did not say that that's what it was, but I won't tell his story for him, but in any case, as many of you know...
Is he doing better? Is he doing well now?
It's going to be a long recovery, I think, and to what extent, like with all of us, we'll see how that shakes down. I mean, he's home, but he has to go in mm-hmm. for regular pulmonary treatments for his lungs. He's gotten pneumonia a couple of times and had to go back in. He had to be quarantined because his immune system is shot. In fact, he might still be. Like I said, I don't want to go much into his story, but many of you know
thanks for sharing.
I did want to mention
Craig.
It, though, because I would like everyone to keep him in their thoughts and prayers, because I'm a firm believer that whether it's thoughts, prayers, karma, whatever your thing is out there for other people, I think that those are powerful and he needs them. So I just wanted to say that. But the song I'm going to play
have him on so he can tell his story so we can all hear it. Maybe he'll come on when he's feeling better and talk about it.
Well, and he's actually, I'd be happy to do that, but he actually has, you know, he was doing, the second and fourth, I think, Monday was always his show, and he was a weekly Monday host forever, but several years ago he did change to two Mondays, but he hasn't been doing a show for a really long time. He's been putting in a tape, and so I had thought at some point, I hoped he'd be better before this and be doing his own show, telling his story, but that just hasn't happened yet, so... He plays tapes or there's not a show that night, I guess. But he had a band for 15 years under two different names. It was kind of a funny story. I won't go into that either just because we're out of time. But they were under label with Sony for quite a while. And... I guess I will tell this part. They were on tour, a European tour. And just like, now see, well, and don't take this wrong, it's kind of like being on label with a book. That, you know, being on label with Sony or the equivalent with a book, whatever, you know, their goal, not the person, not the author, or the musician, but management's goal is to make the most amount of money possible. And they know that the bloom is off the rose within a certain amount of time, you know, within a year, within 9 months, the bloom is off the rose. So what they were doing to his band for the European tour was they were traveling or performing always. They would go from Germany to Japan to the next country, to the next country, and they were on stage performing. And so constant motion, and of course with music, there's screaming crowds, banging instruments, flashing strobe lights, more sensory overload than you could ask for being a band, being a musician, and then never having time to rest in between, you know, being on tour and either traveling or performing. And so he got to one country and he was tired, and I think that everything had just gotten to him and he had a seizure, and it freaked him out, and he took the next plane home, and Sony sued him for breach of contract.
Wait, can I ask you what year that, when was this?
Well, it's been in my tenure here, but I'd say, and I would just be guessing and say a decade ago,
oh,
because
so, yeah,
based on
so
the amount
big,
of time I've been here.
Mm-hmm.
Well, because then they, the same band, well, what happened was anyway, so they sue, they bug the hell out of him for a couple years harassing him, but you can't get blood out of a turnip. And so finally,
mm-hmm.
you know, they wanted to close the books on it, but weren't going to let him off the hook, which, you know, really sucked of them. He breached the contract. It was a medical problem that was the causal factor, so they didn't cut him any slack for that. You know, it wasn't that
mm-hmm.
he was irresponsible and just decided to quit. He had a serious blowback from a condition he had, his TBI, that hadn't
mm-hmm.
manifest in a seizure before, and he had a reaction that a lot of us would have. I want to get the hell out of here, go home, hide, lay down, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Not unusual. I think most of us would understand it. The label did not. So after a couple of years of bothering him, and during that time, he had real disdain for music because it had caused him this problem. And they wound up, thank God, Craig is prolific as hell. He could wake up in the middle of the night not able to sleep and rip off writing a dozen songs, lyrics and
mm-hmm.
music, and they'd be great. And it cost him 100 songs to get out,
wow, yeah.
to close the books. And those might sit on the shelf forever. They could be taken and perverted by some other band.
Sure.
The original integrity of the song taken away is what I mean, and could be changed any way that they want it to be, and they're no longer his. You know, his
mm-hmm.
property is no longer his property. And so a couple years then after that, see, I'm kind of trying to add it up in my mind, because that all happened while I've been here. And so
mm-hmm.
a couple years went by and there was no music, and he was never going to be involved in music again. And then, as I hoped, because he's really got a gift, and I thought it would be a shame, but I didn't push him like a lot of other people did, because I understood, I think, intuitively why he was reacting the way he was, and that when you have a gift like that, you'll find your way back to it.
Exactly,
and so,
yes.
And so he did find his way back. The same band got together under a different name, and they have been performing for several years. And then his bass player, Curly, in the very beginning of COVID, got it, and Craig got it too. This was in the beginning, pre-vaccine. But in Curly's case, he kept, I believe he did have long-term COVID, long hauler, whatever they call it, because he...
Long COVID, isn't that it? Yeah.
He kept having to go back to the hospital and getting pneumonia. And anyway, Craig got a call one night and he talked to him and he said he was feeling better, but he was really getting sick of being sick and tired.
Mm-hmm.
And the next day he died, 33 years old.
Jeez. Yeah, I know. It's This whole COVID thing is so weird. It is, because how it gets some and not others, and I don't know. It just blows my mind, the whole thing. I hope that Craig recovers and comes through and gets his strength back. So, yeah.
Well, this was prophetic, whatever that word is, but they had decided that they were going to, that they were past being a band anymore, because collectively the band had been together 15 years under one name or the other. And so they were going to do a farewell tour, and it was going to be like a 4-album studio work. And then a farewell tour, and they did get the music done. And,
so you're going to play a song for me from there?
Yes, for you specifically, because of your favorite holiday. I took
Halloween.
The long way around, but this is a song, and I'm going to say good night and God bless to everyone out there. Thank you so much for listening. I'll be back next Wednesday. I want to thank Megan for being here tonight, and our new friend, John Heilman. I want to thank him for being here tonight. A couple people were in the chat room. Want to thank them and all of you listeners. I appreciate you.
And thank you, Kim, for your wonderful show.
Thank you. And this is VR Insane, a.k.a. Craig, with the song for Megan on her 5th anniversary.
Thank you, Kim. I appreciate that.
You bet.